This is Birth to Work Radio.
Try to convince a community that had always felt if you had a strong back, you could always make a decent living. That disappeared, but the same people stayed in the community.
The competition is much more prepared in terms of the knowledge base and the expectations, and we have to get there very, very quickly.
The problem with education in America is a problem of trying to use a bureaucratic form to do what is basically a cultural and moral mission.
It's important for business leaders to recognize they play an important role in the vibrancy of the community.
I always felt that as a pediatrician, I was also an educator because of the trust that people have in us.
We know that when parents know their children are in an academic crisis, they will move mountains.
The most important thing for parents to do is spend time in human interaction with children.
My goal as a community leader now is to create responsible, engaged citizens. I have to emulate what I want them to do.
And now, here's your hosts, Elaine V. Scott and Rick Stevens.
Hello, welcome to Birth to Work Radio. My name is Elaine V. Scott, and I'll be your host for today's program. Joining me as co-host is Rick Stevens, a respected business and industry leader for over 30 years and co-author of our book, The System, Seeking the Soul of Commerce. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Elaine. How are you doing today?
Terrific. For those joining us for the first time today, we're so very pleased to offer a warm welcome and a quick introduction. Each week at this time, Birth to Work Radio listeners come together to gain a better and deeper understanding of the challenges of developing the people pipelines that supply the workforce. In our discussions, we talk to both leaders and foot soldiers, you know, the real people in the shops and offices of business, government, health, education, media, and social services organizations. Our conversations are about their very real and complex challenges, some as employees who need talented, capable people, and some as employers. But the Birth to Work that you're listening to now gives you an additional long-term perspective, one in which we integrate into our shows the voices and the challenges faced by extraordinary people doing everyday jobs who are also parents and caregivers, who work with a passion, vision, and hope that what they are accomplishing at the office, at home, in their communities, it's all making a difference for their youngsters to become a part of the same workforce in the future. Our goal for each show is to show that with an agreed-upon alignment of purpose, community stakeholder leaders can help each other evolve a common language for describing action steps that help everyone build capable people with a sense of responsibility, accountability, citizenship, and relationship to the community. Our collective actions then result in systems that produce scalable, measurable, and sustained impact. Now, when Birth to Work team thinks about community stakeholder leadership, one of the communities that first comes to mind is Huntsville, Alabama, and Lucia Cape. Hi, Lucia.
Hello.
Lucia is one of our most enlightened stakeholder leaders. We've had the privilege of working with her now for several years. Let me give you some background on Huntsville and how we ended up working with Lucia. For those of us in our listening audience not familiar with the city, it's a place where renowned scientist Wernher von Braun did his original work on rockets that provided the foundation for what is now NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center and, known to kids, the famous Space Camp, as well as the U.S. Army's Redstone Arsenal. It's a terrific community, a lot of incredibly bright and wonderful people, low unemployment, just an all-around great place to raise a family. What's interesting about Huntsville as well, though, is that it faces a challenge most cities and communities can only dream of. It's got a shortage of technical talent, and it's that issue that brought Rick, Lucia, and I together 4 years ago. Now, to Lucia. Lucia is the walking personification of a stakeholder leader from a birth-to-work point of view. She is a working woman with a mission. Her work experience has crossed every economic sector, having led her to become the first vice president for workforce at the Chamber of Commerce in Huntsville, Alabama. Since her appointment to the job in 2006, Lucia has been charged with establishing the Chamber's new workforce division in response to the workforce challenges brought on by the region's economic growth, including the 2005 Military Base Realignment and Closure Act, I think that was, and continues to bring thousands of jobs to Redstone Arsenal, which is the heart of our nation's Army rocket and missile programs for over 40 years. Now, prior to joining the chamber staff, Lucia was a contractor to the nearby NASA Marshall Space Flight Center's Academic Affairs Office, where she worked in informal education, including the development and nurturing along of business industry partnerships. And she was a presidential management intern and then a contractor to the Centers for Disease Control and focused on public health partnerships, communication, workforce, and law. The question is there anything you haven't been engaged in, Lucia? Certainly, Lucia, your incredible background in working in and among the multiple sectors of society has not only broadened your resume, but along with a now blossoming family life, you've said recently you are an even more motivated community stakeholder leader. Rick?
Hey, Elaine, thanks very much. And so, Lucia, with that as background, and as Elaine, a great career, great partnership, and really enjoy the work you're doing. Can you kind of walk through and help our audience understand really how your work's grown since we first started and explain a little about what it is that you're doing now as part of the chamber?
Sure. As was mentioned, I was previously a contractor to Marshall's NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center here in Huntsville, and one day I get a call from my supervisor asking me to take a look at this paper on ensuring the future workforce skills, particularly around the aerospace industry. And it meshed pretty well with what I was doing, trying to get some Marshall NASA programs aligned into the state curriculum in Alabama. And he said, read this paper and see what we can do about it. And that turned into a conference, which turned into a stakeholder agreement among the people at the conference that we were going to all work together, which was much bigger than the project I really thought I was taking on. And a couple years down the pike, was actually wondering, was this really what I thought I was getting into? But we branched out from just including Marshall's programs and the school system to look at, with Rick and your encouragement and Elaine's encouragement, to look at the community as a whole and how all the pieces of our community work together. And, I was pretty much a blank slate at the time and can credit the two of you with helping me understand and understand as we talked with our community all the pieces and how they related to each other and how nothing was as simple as simply starting a new program and calling it the magic bullet that was going to fix either education or workforce in our community or anywhere for that matter.
Lucy, Elaine, if I can interrupt, Elaine was kind of talking about the challenges that Huntsville faces, which, kind of unique for Huntsville. What was going on at the time? Because when you talk about, getting people together and, stakeholders, what was really going on in Huntsville and what were the challenges that you saw?
When we first started with this stakeholder coalition, as often happens in organizations, we were very focused on what we were doing. We had, as I said, a few programs we were looking at, and as we started trying to integrate these into the community and get community support, someone on the outside from our original small group said, hey, have you been paying attention to the base realignment and closure impact in this community? And we said, huh? That's Army. We're NASA. And he said, well, it's going to affect everybody, so let's take a look at it. And as we started looking at what BRAC was going to do to our community and how it was going to increase the growth in our community and increase the challenges we faced at providing the workforce needed for BRAC and for the other growth opportunities, we realized you can't just look at for us at NASA or for any organization at just our area of focus. We've got to look at what the other impacts are and how this is going to compound and complicate things for us. So in looking at BRAC, we realized this is community-wide. This is actually region-wide. The BRAC approach here in Huntsville is part of a Tennessee Valley approach, which is North Alabama and parts of South Tennessee, because the economy is fluid. It doesn't stop at the city limits.
So you found, we use the term stakeholders, those who are really engaged and have a vested interest in the outcome. Sounds like you found not only Redstone Arsenal, NASA, as two of probably the largest employers in Huntsville, but probably the education community where enough people come from the pipeline, city leaders, business leaders. You found a whole number of stakeholders that probably didn't know they had a major impact and what the potential could be.
Absolutely, absolutely, and didn't realize at the time, and we've come to realize this together, didn't realize at the time that you can't just say we're going to fix this one piece. One of the first successes that the coalition had was to facilitate a meeting between the community, the Tennessee Valley BRAC community, and our Redstone Arsenal leadership, including at the time Marshall Space Flight Center, and still including Marshall Space Flight Center, and bring them together to talk about workforce issues. And at that very first meeting, I remember someone in the room saying, we're not going to discuss education. This is just about employment. And I remember being very defeated. And a very wise man and mentor to me here in the Huntsville community now said, you know, take the success, see the success in this and run with it. So we said, okay, we'll just look at workforce. And as you start chipping away at workforce, you realize it's not long before you do get into education. And it was not something we really had to fight anybody on as we moved forward, because you realize it's all connected. So now we are doing education in this workforce group.
And so you bring an interesting point up, Lucia. It sounded like everyone getting together, they're kind of worried about their own areas, their own silos, so to speak. They probably all had different languages, different words they used to describe what was going on. And certainly they didn't want someone from outside their silo in the middle of their silo, you know, trying to drive an impact. And maybe that's probably a good place to start after we come back from the break, is to talk about what that meant and the various systems that began to come together, and, you know, people's desires to, you know, whether we had to invent new approaches or not. So with that, this is Rick Stevens, Elaine Scott, and Lucia Cape with Birth to Work Radio. We'll be right back after a short break. This is Rick Stevens, Elaine Scott, and Lucia Cape with Birth to Work Radio, and we're talking about some of the exciting and dynamic things that Lucia Cape's been facilitating, leading with regard to workforce in Huntsville, Alabama, a great community in which to live, and I know Lucia enjoys, but also one that has had a unique challenge that many communities would love to have, and that is, how do you find enough technical talent to be able to meet the needs of the community? Lucia, before the break, we're talking about different language, you know, people operating different silos. You mentioned that some of the community leaders said, hey, this is only going to be about workforce. We're not going to talk about education. Can you give a little more flavor and perspective about the different perspectives that people had, and maybe talk about some of the different language or data they used, and then talk about how you move forward to get people to really come together?
Sure. Along the same lines of the discussion that resulted in this, we're not going to touch education, we also had to set some demographic parameters. And one of the early discussions was, this is just about inside the fence, which would mean inside Redstone Arsenal. And it sounded very simple at the time to say inside the fence, affecting only the people on the arsenal. But then you realize that about half the workforce is civilian contractors, and the other half is government civilians. You can't distinguish between the two. And you talk about outside the fence, you know, you're setting artificial boundaries around something that's very fluid and organic, the process there. So applying these labels to things and trying to define them and control them, because that, you know, especially working with a lot of military, they're used to being able to say one thing and have that one thing happen. We learned that there was no boundary that we could really work within. We had to adjust for things on the outside. We had to not only accommodate but collaborate with systems and people and functions that maybe didn't have our exact goals in mind. So it became much more of a process than a product, and it still is. It doesn't get any easier because you know it's going to be difficult. It just means you slog through those more difficult days, knowing that was coming. So,
well, certainly, it sounds like Redstone had their measurements, and being a military organization, said, you know, kind of hierarchical and used to heading down a path, give directions and go. You know, NASA had probably some measurements. The chamber probably had their measurements, and want to do their thing their own way. How did you, or how are you coming to some alignment about, you know, some consistent approaches? Did you have to invent some new ones, or did you kind of take the best of what was there and just start using it moving forward?
We're trying to identify the things that are working, because there were a lot of things already on the ground here that were making a big difference, and it was a matter of talking through them and finding out which were more accessible. There were some, for in education, for instance, there were some state programs that were just doing great things in the classroom and having some great impacts. And being able to say, okay, let's rally around this rather than try to seek outside funding to do something that might feel more innovative or might have a more independent flavor to it. Let's just hunker down and run with what is, it's already in 25% of the schools, and we've got a promise of continued funding. Let's not try to be too avant-garde about it. You know, it's working, let's do it, and really getting people to rally around something that wasn't there. A lot of the ownership has to go away. So in identifying things like that in education, and also in what our big push right now is recruiting. And recruiting for government agencies is very different than recruiting for private corporations. And we're having to say, you know, what works for you, what works for us, and what can work for both of us together, so that we're using the best of both and using what's adaptable to both, because they are different worlds.
So it sounds like what you found is all the stakeholders had, you know, this common motivation. Boy, we want more technical talent. The common expectations got to get more, but they all had different systems, different languages, different approaches getting there, and picking the best of what was there and convincing others to use it sounds like it paid huge dividends in terms of where you're going. Where do you see yourself, Lucia, in this process? Certainly, this journey. Are you beginning to see some improvements in people availability, or beginning to attract more people to Huntsville, or have you got a ways to go and you're not quite ready yet to declare that you've got some systems in place? What's it look like?
We really do have the groundwork laid to be very successful with this. I've been pleasantly surprised in going to conferences across the country over the last year that are addressing this very issue, specifically around BRAC and around other workforce issues in technical fields. And I find that we're really ahead of the curve, and I'm hearing that from people at a national level, that Huntsville really has not necessarily cracked the nut, but we've got all the pieces in place to make that first crack. And that has to do with sitting around a table and going back to what I called the first success of this coalition, was getting the Arsenal leadership and the community leadership to sit down and say, we're going to tackle this together. One great example of how big of a success this was that we defined this as a workforce group, and we focus on workforce issues. And recently, the county here, Madison County, where Huntsville is, got a grant to do some visioning over the next several years related to BRAC and how that was going to affect our communities and the region. And they have task forces for most of the areas, health and social services, transportation, infrastructure. And they purposely did not create one for workforce, because we already existed. And we're already working those issues. So I took that as a real feather in our cap to be able to say, everybody else has to get these task forces around them, but we've been working together now for well over a year and are making great strides. And just know now that this is how we operate, that none of us says, well, I'm just going to go out and do this by myself. And in talking to each other, we cleared up a lot of the obstacles that we thought we were going to face.
It sounds like this was a pretty messy process along the way, too, in terms of, you know, having the discussions and back and forth. And, you know, along the way, when you got started, this was probably not as smooth as you would have liked. It sounds like that tenacity, keeping going, recognizing you may take two steps forward, a step back once in a while as part of the process. Can you share with, you know, the audience some of the things that you personally did to be able to keep this thing rolling?
Wow. personally, it was everyone at the table went through the same thing. There are days you go into these group meetings and you really don't feel like you're clicking with anyone. You feel like, didn't we just discuss this? Didn't we talk about this at the last meeting?
I was going to say that was just in reference to that. I remember the number of times you said, Elaine, I think I must have said this a dozen times.
Right.
But every time I say it, somebody else gets it.
One more person gets it. Exactly. And we had a joke that, a running joke that every meeting started back at the time when the Earth's crust began to cool. And we would slowly work up from there at every meeting. But it's true. You know, one more person gets it, and the next time, that's one less person that is sitting there with a puzzled look or a very you know, angry look, like this is going nowhere. So it does help every time you have to go through it. And you know, part of that is the different ways people think. I think about the discussion we had about a map, and my friend and mentor and at the time supervisor had this image of a map as like a AAA triptych where you flip the page and it shows you A to B exactly where you're going. And, you know, that's what you need, is a roadmap telling you where to go. And, Elaine, you categorize the map as more of a circulatory system of the body. Like you strip away the skin of the body and you see how all the veins and the arteries connect and you know, what goes where. And he, when he heard that, it was like the, you know, the big cartoon anvil hitting him in the head. Oh, that's what you mean. And from then on, he was the biggest champion of what we needed to do, how big the, you know, how big the problem was, how difficult the process would be, and yet how necessary and how rewarding it would be in the end.
I would say your greatest contribution to that was the consistency with which you stayed with the process that we'd had the very first time we had our first conference with you.
Yeah, at the risk of personifying that definition of insanity, do the same thing over and over and expect a different result. But you know, eventually it did pay off. And I said that one person per meeting. If you get that far, you're making progress.
Well, that sounds great, and I think a real testament. You know, for those of our audience who would like to learn more about what's gone on in Huntsville, you know, and particularly the work that's underway on the Huntsville Community Stakeholder Leadership Development, you can go to our website, www.birth2work.org, and find a case study and white paper on Huntsville and what we did together to help identify not only the key stakeholder leaders, but to begin the process of aligning the systems in Huntsville that we've just spent the last nearly half hour, you know, Lucy's been sharing with her, you know, the process going forward. As we get ready to take a break, I want to say thank you, Lucia, for sharing all the, you know, the great work that you and everyone in the Huntsville leadership's been doing, because it's certainly making a difference and going to be critically important for the long-term sustainment of Huntsville. As we get ready to take our break, I'm going to turn the mic over to Elaine, and when we come back, Elaine and Lucia, we're going to talk about not only what's gone on from Huntsville, but how this is translated into what Lucia's done more on her private life, and understand the relationship of family, you know, the family role, the working role, and how all this ties together, because it's that exact same thing. How do you bring systems together to integrate and align to deliver much better results going forward? And with that, this is Rick Stevens, Lucia Tate, Elaine Scott. We'll take a break. We're back in a few moments.
The System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce by Rick Stevens and Elaine Scott is winning accolades as an accessible business novel with a striking new perspective about community collaboration and workforce development for the 21st century. In the book, community leaders in the fictional town of Chantilly learn why they must think and act differently to build a sustainable workforce for the future. Real stakeholder leaders from around the country have used the book as a model for their own communities. Vicki Hogan is president and CEO of the Vermilion Advantage in Danville, Illinois. She and the Vermilion team have been collaborating with Birth to Work to implement the strategies outlined in the system.
Your book is really incredible. It's like a roadmap that in story form really sheds the light on a national issue and makes it obvious in a story form who the key stakeholders really have to be to create sustainability.
Sustainable results will only come from collaboration, alignment, and integration of the people, programs, and ideas of a unified community. The system Igniting the Soul of Commerce shines a light on the challenges that communities across the country are facing right now and the forces that drive and influence people's behaviors. Stakeholder leaders such as Angela Phillips Diaz are using the book as a guide for effective stakeholder action. In her work with the University of California, Riverside, she's charged with improving the college-going rate in the region.
I literally have the book on my desk and use it as a reference tool all the time. It's been invaluable to me.
This system, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, is the guide for stakeholder leaders who want to do business as usual in a new way. Buy it today at BrickToWork.org or Amazon.com.
Hi, welcome back. This is Elaine Scott, Rick Stevens, and Lucia Cape. With a world of attention on the role of the working woman these days, I thought it would be of value to hear about your family role and your work role together, because not only has your commitment and willingness to be a lifelong learner helped you create and step into the role of Huntsville's first vice president for the for workforce at the chamber, in the last few years we've been working together, you've also given birth to two beautiful children. I think, as I recall, you were pregnant at the time we first met. That seems to be the history of our existence. But I also happen to know that besides the fact that Evelyn and Julian are two magnificent children, that you've taken every step to manage each and every role that you take on as mother, as wife, as vice president, with as much thoughtful attention to one role as the other. And so my question is to you is, do you see these roles as different, or do you see them as related?
They're definitely related, and that's a great question. When I was offered the job at the chamber, and as you said, it was a new position they were creating, I knew they were looking for someone, and when everything fell into place that they asked me to interview and made me the offer, my boss, the president of the chamber now, asked me what I was looking for in this position, and I said to him that I wanted a job that was not an artificial distinction between the rest of my life. I wanted something that that I would not feel like I was on the clock if I was thinking about it at home, and something that, you know, on weekends that I would care just as much about what was going on in my work life as I did, you know, between 8 and 5 in the office. And, you know, that's not to say I'm a workaholic. I'm very defensive of my family time and my private time. As I told you when I was on maternity leave, nope, I don't think I'm going to be responding to emails. You know, I do create my family space, but I didn't want to spend the, you know, 40-plus hours a week that you spend in a job doing something that I didn't care about after hours. And it was a great opportunity to take this position because that's exactly what I've got.
And the leadership that backs you up.
Yes.
And so when you discuss that, so that's more of a mindset that drives you as you consider what you're doing. And how does it give meaning to your work and impact the development of your community? You talk about it in relation to your children and the future of your children. Your work isn't just about something that you go do. Mindlessly.
What I do is for the benefit of my community, and this is the community my children will be raised in and I hope stay in. My whole family is here, my parents, my siblings and nieces and nephews, and I know that what I do in my job is a direct benefit to all of us, and, you know, and by extension, you know, the human family, and when you think about your neighbors and how what you do is good for them, and it's more than getting your paycheck so that you can, you know, send your kids to college. It's really doing what's going to make growing up here and hopefully staying here great for them. And that's a great motivator for anyone to be able to say what I do every day is of direct benefit to the people I love and to people I don't even know.
Well, I think that's important, and it's important to be able to say that because I recall that part of the training, in part of the modular training that we did when we, in the early stages of this project, had to do with helping people to look at data about the community. You had your, part of your stakeholder team. If you recall, we had one of the first steps that people went through was to look at data about the community, not just stories, not just anecdotes, not just where people lived or what they worked in, but data about the community and about places they didn't necessarily have much to do with. Do you remember what that stirred in you as you realized that there were things about the community you'd really never thought about?
Well, I remember thinking that, having not grown up here, that you get one picture of the community from what you do individually. You get another maybe if you read the paper or watch the news. But looking at data, you realize that there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make the news. There's a lot of stuff you don't encounter day to day, and it's all part of this place you're calling home. I've also, since having children, been made aware of some new, I guess, data points in the big picture. You know, my husband and I live in a part of town that's very different from where my parents live and where my siblings live. And when we get together and talk about where our kids will be in school and what opportunities they have and maybe what challenges they have, you know, we're in different enough communities within this same town that I'm able to see, wow, you know, this is something that if I were part of the community on the other end of town, maybe I wouldn't have to worry about. But there's a lot of diversity, and there are a lot of opportunities to get outside of your reality and see what other people have to face every day. And,
so being a stakeholder leader helps you do that because it helps you see where the opportunities and the challenges are throughout the community, and it doesn't mean you stay sheltered inside your house and out of fear, but suddenly you have information to get out and actually participate.
Sure, and that you have you know, the responsibility to participate. You know, one reaction would be, well, just move to where the good schools are. And the other reaction is, you know, let's give everybody a chance.
And let's be part of helping to make that an option by practicing the same kinds of things that we do with our workforce as we do with the area right outside our doorstep. And my question, I think at one point you talked about how you'd brought some of this to your church and some of the other activities and things that you do in your life, and you found that the skill sets enable you to think differently all the way around.
Sure. I mean, the systems approach, the systems thinking is applicable to any aspect of your life. I mean, it's sometimes harder to see when it's your own realm versus the, you know, the way that larger corporations or the community as a whole work. But yeah, it very much is all part of a bigger picture, part of that circulatory system.
Well, that's part of the value of the kind of training. When one is asked to change one's view about how one operates and move from this so-called position of trying to, quote-unquote, balance work and family and as if somehow you have to walk between those two worlds, the reality is that once you begin to go through this process that we talk about and teach people to think about this systems process, you realize that all of these things are all connected and they're not isolated actions. And what we're asking for people to consider when we talk about leaders thinking differently, stakeholder leaders are people in any position where they influence the behavior of other people, which in fact is what parents do. Mm-hmm. And what teachers do, and what, so everyone really has some aspect of a leadership role. When we come back, we want to talk a little bit about maintaining, how do you go about maintaining a visionary perspective going forward in the face of so many different pieces of information that often conflict with our own ideas about what the world ought to be like. We'll come back in just a minute. This is Elaine Scott, Rick Stevens, and Lucia Kate. This is Elaine Scott with Rick Stevens and Lucia Cape, and we've been discussing the role of the individual when a person moves from the office to the home, especially as a mom in an economy where people are working to have the things that they need and want to have in order to make a life that's comfortable and fun for themselves and their families. I have to share with you something interesting. I was just watching something on a video series called Planet Earth, and there was a statement in there about the fragility of a whole species that was based on the quality of life of the mother. And I think we sometimes don't talk very much about that in our culture, and in a culture that's very sensitive about the role of the woman in the workplace. And one of the things I've always felt very inspired by is your role and the fact that you were always at ease with your role as you took on each new challenge with your children, and then you took the skill sets that you had acquired, and you seemed to fall easily into this category of what I call the lifelong learner. What was your sense of transitioning with each of your children? You have two children now. Tell me a little bit about the influence that your work has had on you as a mom.
Well, I feel like the intersection between the work I was doing and when our work together started, it couldn't have been at a better time for me personally. I waited till I was a little older than average to have my children, and I was never one of these, when I was growing up, someone who was gung-ho about having a family. It was something my husband and I decided on. You know, we had some deliberation, but we had been married for 5 years. We had been together for nearly 10 before that, so we were a little older than average. And I didn't really do any research about kids. And when I was able to share with you that I was expecting, and you were so full of information about what research says about the brain and the development, and how what we do with children in the early years is so vital to what their potential is, and the things that you and Rick both addressed in your paper about television, about nurturing and about how they're treated directly influences their potential and what they become. I felt like it was so fortuitous for me because it was a front row seat to, how to be a parent right here at the time I needed it. So for me personally, it was a perfect intersection of work and where my life was. And as I move into learning to be a mother to two and still be active and engaged in my career, I get to have on this journey, I get expertise of you, I get to have other women in the workplace who have had the same priorities as mothers and as professionals, and their encouragement and being able to talk about things, such as, where do you go with your pump to, when you're down in Montgomery on state business, where do you go with your pump to nurse or pump milk? And to have people who are willing to talk about that, because it's certainly not something that comes up in staff meetings like where to park at the Capitol does, but it's great to be able to have conversations knowing that now it's more common knowledge that things like nursing and things like being there for your children are part of workforce development. They're part of the long-term view.
Part of the visionary perspective, as we would say, going forward. Are you looking at things that you want to contribute and that you yourself then support other women and talk to them and encourage them to become part of a sharing message for each other and a support for each other, so that all of us feel a safe place to go, no matter what choices we make, that there's a safe place for us to be part of the community and this whole message of being a mom and being being a parent.
Sure, and being able to be open about things that maybe 10 years ago even weren't considered appropriate for the workplace, or maybe the conversations weren't held as readily. Be able to pass on to women who are behind me in either their family development or their career and make that okay for them is the best gift to pass along, because other women did it for me.
Well, and it's what you told them to go do. It's not what you told them to go buy.
Yeah.
that was my big contribution. I said, just look more at what you do with the children and less about what you have to own. Get rid of it. You need less stuff and more you.
Mm-hmm.
So good for you. Well, I must admit, as always, Lucia, you never fail to inspire me. I continue to look forward to work with you and the inspired leadership of the Huntsville community, especially around the chamber and the other stakeholder leaders who hold a vision for Huntsville and its future. It's what you represent as a team. It's what you represent as an organization that is just continues to amaze us, and we want to continue to support that work. We thank you for being with us today. Rick, did you want to close out with some information about how to get the papers?
Well, certainly, I can help that, but I'd also like to echo my thanks, Lucia. I thought a great discussion on both sides of the fence, and certainly you got some challenges in front of you, and we'll look forward to continuing to working with you long term.
Well, special thanks to both of you for fostering along the way. Like I said, many of us here were blank slates, and working with the two of you has been very, very important to us.
Well, thank you. And to Elaine's comment, relative to the paper, again, I refer back to our website, www.birth2work.org, where there's the case study as well as the white paper. And the white paper that's referred to was originally put together to support an American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics a conference that occurred about 4 or 5 years ago now. That paper is available and posted out on our website.
It's available. It's available for free on the website.
Thank you, Elaine. It's posted out there, available for free to be able to download. And you'll also find again the case study that talks about what's gone on at Huntsville and be able to give our audience a much greater insight and perspective that they can draw from and be able to use going forward in their own communities and as a model for the way forward.
If any of the listeners in our audience have a question or want any further information about what's happened here, please feel free to grab up a piece of paper and a pencil and write down the website that, again, www.birth2work.org, and send us a note and let us know what you think. The white paper has been around quite a long time. For the last 5 years, it's practically circulated around the globe, and people have written us from all over saying that it helps give them direction and a sense of perspective on the full issue of workforce development. In addition, the book is available, The System, Seeking the Soul of Commerce, where we speak about a community named Chantilly in which the workforce leadership there is working to pull together all of the same elements in a fictional setting, but with real data, real information, and real issues. And the community works to come together to look at their workforce issues and say, what can we do to help assure that we have the people that we need going forward in the future? That's available on our website and at Amazon.com. So we thank you again to our listeners for joining us today. And this is Elaine Scott, Rick Stevens, and Lucia Cape at Birth to Work, Redefining Community Leadership.
Thank you for joining us on Birth to Work Radio. For more information about Birth to Work, to stream or download podcasts of archived radio programs, or to purchase a hard copy or downloadable version of Rick and Elaine's book, The System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, please visit our website at birth2work.org. That's birth, the number two, work.org. We invite you to send us your feedback and questions directly by emailing info@birth2work.org. Birth to Work Radio, the voice of community stakeholder leaders.